Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook paper and pen to take notes during the show. What we have been doing for some months now is exploring the myths about money. Our money system is not what we have been led to believe. The creation of money has been privatized or taken over by a private money cartel. Except for coins, all of our money is now created as loans advanced by private banking institutions, including the private Federal Reserve. Banks create the principal, but not the interest, to service their loans. To find the interest, new loans must continually be taken out, expanding the money supply, inflating prices, and robbing you of the value of your money. We've been specifically looking at a book called The Web of Debt, which unravels the deception and presents a clear picture of the financial abyss towards which we are heading. It then explores workable alternatives, particularly one that was tested in colonial America and is grounded in the best of American economic thought, including the writings of Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln. It helps us to analyze and improve our own financial security, personally and nationally, and to deeply understand the cause of the problems we are personally experiencing financially. In the last shows, I started looking at solutions specifically, starting with the critical issues. After a lengthy journey into the Web of Debt book in particular by Elizabeth Brown, I have been focusing now on solutions that the Thrive movement has offered, actually analyzing a lot of what the Web of Debt exposes and stepping into a very broad integrated response, which actually, as we will see, eventually goes way beyond just economics. We ended the last show looking at the bankers having a monopoly on currency. Again, this is from the Thrive movement. You can go to their website and probe very deeply into all of these points. That website is www.thrivemovement.com, thrivemovement.com. They also have a fantastic movie that you can watch that addresses the economics and many interrelated issues. But back to the bankers having a monopoly on currency. This is a danger. Our current economic well-being is controlled by an elite few who have been granted a monopoly on currency. So the first question is, why has the government awarded exclusive money-making privileges to central bankers? It turns out, at least in the United States, this wasn't the case before the 19th and 20th century. And the U.S. government certainly doesn't support monopolies in other industries. In fact, it usually tries to break them up. So why is a favored group of people given a monopoly on currency? When citizens rely so heavily on its performance, we give this monopoly to a select group. Could we benefit from competition of currencies and come up with better alternatives? And could we create currencies that hold value over time? These are basic fundamental questions. This notion of a monopoly on currency is a foreign concept to most people, but it's really an important one. The government has literally put our well-being in the hands of the Federal Reserve, which is, what most people don't know, a group of private bankers, by granting them the sole power to issue currency. They control the money supply, interest rates, and hence the value of the dollar, which impacts everyone. And what's worst is there is no regulation or control with any substantial value to the Federal Reserve, and there's no transparency to give the information to the American people about what they are doing on a daily, monthly, and yearly basis. So we have this banking setup, but then the government backs this monopoly with the state military, a monopoly on force, basically, which guarantees safety of the bankers, even when they are offering bad loans, devaluing our currency, and bailing themselves out, as was the case which we saw in the most recent economic collapse, and which continues even this week with Chase showing billions of dollars of loss, which will not get the investigation and exposure that is so desperately needed to get American people aware of what is actually going on to create these debacles. It should be noted too that JP Morgan Chase is one of the owners of the Federal Reserve. In exchange for the state military protection, the government gets to borrow money whenever it wants from the Federal Reserve and doesn't have to levy taxes directly from the American taxpayer to fund unpopular actions or policies, such as wars. In the end, the taxpayer pays the bill, and the interest on the debt, which continues to grow at an unsustainable rate every single day. For example, the U.S. debt clock as of today is at $15.726 trillion of debt. This monopoly is really, in fact, destroying our economy. It prevents competition and more desirable alternatives from emerging. Now, if we were to open up the market to competition, people will naturally gravitate to sound, reliable currencies and be able to create more prosperous lives and communities. So, for example, the Thrive Movement suggests competition of currencies as supporting thriving economies, pointing out some successful currencies to learn from. For example, the colonial-era interest-free currency. The early American colonies issued their own money called colonial scrip with great success. Just enough money was printed and circulated to facilitate full commerce and prosperity without paying interest to central bankers. There was no debt to be repaid. The colony simply created more money when it was needed, making sure it was spent or lent into existence at the same rate as the real economic growth of goods and services. The colonial scrip was eventually shut down by the British government when they realized the threat of widespread prosperity and independence that it posed. However, it showed that a fiat-based system has shown some potential for at least short-term effectiveness when combined with reasonable, responsible distribution and management of money. But therein lies its downfall because of its opportunity for abuse. And I'll come back to this in a moment. For those of you just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So colonial scrip is one sample alternative that Thrive gives. Another is inflation-proof, interest-free, government-issued currency in Guernsey. Not being a world traveler, I didn't know where Guernsey was, but it's a small island about 75 miles south of the Great British Rock. For almost 200 years, the government of Guernsey has been issuing interest-free money without causing inflation. The money supply has gone up about 25 times its original size, but the economy has remained strong and prosperous. Guernsey is one of the only countries where central bankers or governments haven't dismantled the alternative money system. And as you recall from my shows on the web of debt, the central bankers and governments have dismantled alternative money systems throughout the world on a regular basis. Another example of this kind of alternate currency is the Liberty Dollar. This alternative currency was created in 1998 by a private nonprofit organization named NORFED, which is the National Organization for Repeal of the Federal Reserve Act and the Internal Revenue Code. The Liberty Dollar was 100% backed by silver and gold, meaning that the holder of the currency had ownership of a certain sum of silver or gold. The Liberty coins, paper, or digital receipts were redeemable for gold or silver that were stored in a warehouse in Idaho, where it was monitored and audited monthly. This currency held its value over time and quickly claimed the circulation of $20 million, making it the second most popular American currency after Federal Reserve notes. In 2007, the government raided the group's six warehouses and offices, confiscating the reserves and computers, claiming the coins were illegal because they could be confused with U.S. coins. Motions have been filed for return of those unlawfully taken assets, and the decision is still pending. But the story indicates the strong desire for sound commodity-backed currency that would guide the market if currencies were free to compete for our selection. And one last example is the debt-free Italian CIMEC. In 2000, a wealthy Italian professor, Giacinto Oriti, experimented with a debt-free currency, hoping to prove that central bankers lowered the purchasing power of money by loaning it out at interest. So he issued a debt-free alternative currency called CIMEC and offered it to the people in the small town of Guardiagrelli, Italy. The CIMEC was a huge success. People discovered that one CIMEC had twice the purchasing power of the lira and were eager to shop with the alternative currency. 2.5 billion CIMEC circulated rapidly. The program needed a wealthy benefactor to get going, but it still shows the great potential of debt-free currency to facilitate economic growth and prosperity. So, using this as a backdrop, what can we do? Use or create alternative currencies in your own community. Many alternative currencies have emerged in recent years with great success, such as the New York Ithaca Hour and the Berkshire in Massachusetts. Check them out, Google them to learn more about the benefits and challenges. The Ithaca Hours, this local currency, has been widely used in Ithaca, New York. Many businesses and community members participate in the program and are helping to keep money within the community. That's a very important thing. The next one was the Berkshires. Since this local currency was issued in the fall of 2006, 2.7 million Berkshires have circulated in the region of Berkshire, Massachusetts. Consumers get a 5% discount on purchases, and participating stores are helping to establish a thriving local economy. So again, this is taking the monopoly on currency and eradicating it at the root level. I highly urge people to continue to learn about these things and not just accept everything they read in the media, newspapers, or other news sources that are effectively controlled and budgeted by the major banking institutions. Now, that said, let's move on to another issue. The Federal Reserve determines how much your money is worth. And just by way of review, because we've talked about this before, the Federal Reserve does determine how much your money is worth. The Federal Reserve took control in 1913. The U.S. dollar has lost more than 96% of its purchasing power. $1 in 1913 is now worth 4 cents. This, of course, is caused by inflation, something the Fed is very good at creating and something that has serious consequences for everyone. It means today's hard-earned money will be worth less tomorrow. Some even call it another tax on the American people. This is happening because the Federal Reserve is pumping more and more money into the economy without any connection to the amount of goods and services being produced. As a result, the value of the dollar continues to go down. Also, as we said before, the Federal Reserve sets interest rates. The Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee in New York determines interest rates and the amount of money in circulation without anyone else's approval. This impacts your access to student loans, car loans, home loans, all loans. And also, the Federal Reserve orchestrates booms and busts, literally planned. In the 2008 economic collapse, the biggest commercial banks came out on top, even though they were the ones who created the problem in the first place. This was no accident. Through ownership and control of the Federal Reserve, bankers are able to orchestrate booms and busts and then bail themselves out. This has been the case throughout our history. So as we just discussed, one solution to this problem with the Federal Reserve is opening up the market to other currencies. Just think about it. Our hard-earned money does not have to lose power over time. We can eliminate legal tender laws that currently give the Federal Reserve a monopoly on money creation and open up the market to other currencies. This would allow various types of currencies to compete, some fiat-based, others backed by commodities such as gold or silver. And since there would be no subsidies or bailouts, the best would naturally come out on top. A number of economists currently believe that the only way a currency can maintain its purchasing power, however, is by backing it with a commodity. This may be the case, but there are examples of successful fiat-based currencies as well. For example, Thomas Greco Jr., a leading authority on free market approaches to monetary systems, makes the case in his book, The End of Money and the Future of Civilization, that credit, which is debt-based money, is a legitimate improvement over previous forms of money, and it's just bankers' control of credit that gets in the way. So it might be wise if you get the chance to either go to Greco's website, which is www.reinventingmoney.com. Reinventingmoney.com. But with all this, the bottom line is if we open up the market, we can actually test these theories and see what works best. Because the way the Fed is running our economic system, it is not working. If you're just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Another thing that I want to review is a point that was mentioned in the last show, and that's allowing other banks to form. This too would be a good solution. Rather than just one centralized bank, there could be various banking systems. In stage one of reforming current systems, which we talked about, the government could set up its own lending facility and create its own money, rather than give the power to the Federal Reserve. This would save Americans billions of dollars every year because they would no longer have to pay interest on the debt to the Federal Reserve. This would have to coincide with publicly financed elections to make sure government leaders are accountable to the public and making good banking decisions. We will never hear enough of this about what you can do. You got to speak up, talk about how money works with others, help demystify the basics and explore the alternatives. Put your money in a local bank. Stop funding the problem and start funding the solution all in one move. Take your money out of destructive central banks and put it into a local bank or credit union. They can use your deposits to fund locally owned businesses and good sustainable projects. And the third thing is join a movement to audit and end the Federal Reserve. This would expose the Fed's destructive practices and create honest alternatives. Now, just a moment to expand on banking locally. You want to align your money with your values. Centralized banks are the main funders of environmentally harmful industries such as nuclear, coal, and clear-cutting logging companies. They are also responsible for the most recent economic collapse that caused people around the world to lose their homes, their jobs, and their retirements. They use customers' deposits to make these destructive loans. Are these the projects you want to keep supporting with your deposits? If not, then you need to pull your money out of centralized banks and find a community bank or credit union that invests in good local community projects. You know most of these banks. That is the central banks you want to stay away from. Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, HSBC Holdings, Citigroup, Mitsubishi, Industrial and Commercial Bank, Wells Fargo, China Construction Bank, Bank of China, Royal Bank of Scotland, BNP Paribas in France, Barclays in UK, Banco Santander in Spain, Agriculture Bank of China, Credit Agricole in France, Sumito Mitsui Financial Group in Japan, Mizuho Financial Group in Japan, Lloyds Banking Group in the United Kingdom, Goldman Sachs US, and UniCredit in Italy. You can actually go to the Thrive Movement website and take a look at this list. And that again is www.thrivemovement.com. Now with that, there really is a three-step guide to move your money to a local bank. First, you gather a list of local banks and credit unions. You can usually come up with a list by calling your Chamber of Commerce, contacting a local credit union, and asking about other local banks, or by using the Yellow Pages. Facebook and other friend-based social networks can help you learn which banks are best. Many local banks and credit unions will also help you distinguish the real local establishments from those simply trying to sound community-based, which is unfortunately too many. Don't be fooled by the name. Union Bank of California is owned by Mitsubishi in Japan and funds some of the most destructive logging ventures on the planet. There's also another way. You can enter your zip code on the Move Your Money website to find local banks and credit unions in your area. Again, that's Move Your Money. It's a website. The second step is to evaluate the banks by calling around and visiting their websites. The first and most important questions you want to ask are, one, what percentage of your money is loaned locally? Obviously, the more the better. Second thing is, are you owned by a bigger bank or do you intend to be bought out? If so, find a different bank. Are you FDIC insured? Never put more than $250,000 in one bank. So that's the second step. The third is consider your own needs and what the bank offers to make your final selection. Is the bank doing what you care about and offering services that are important to you? There are some things you probably want to consider. Does the bank have a good reputation in the community? Is the bank committed to supporting local businesses, environmental stewardship, social and economic equality, and other values of particular importance to you? The next is, are the employees at the bank paid well, local, diverse, and seemingly cared for in their jobs? Do they have sound business practices and financial statements? Analyze their annual reports. How close would you like the bank's location to be to your home or place of work? What are the hours of operation? Does this work with your schedule? Does the bank have good customer service? What are their ATM fees? Are there multiple ATMs in town and across the state? Can you access the bank or credit union through international ATM machines to make travel easy? What type of online banking services do they have? Is paperless billing an option? Do they have any mileage credit cards if that's important to you? Can you apply to see what credit limit you qualify for before opening an account? If it's lower than your current limit, ask if a transfer of credit is possible. What are their lending and investment services like? What are their certificate of deposit interest rates? What are their wire transfer fees? These are all things that you need to consider. If some of the services you have received from a large bank are not available, ask what they would need to implement the service. It may be that if enough customers show an interest and a commitment, that the bank can accommodate a request. In the Thrive experience, this has been the case with waiving ATM fees, granting larger credit limits, and providing international services. And there are also some local banking resources. Move Your Money campaign. This campaign partners with other organizations to promote local banking. So far, they've moved hundreds of millions of dollars out of Wall Street megabanks. You can enter your zip code on their website to search for local banks and credit unions in your area. The website is moveyourmoneyproject.org. It's all one word, moveyourmoneyproject.org. Another local banking resource is Audio Guide with Catherine Austin Fitz on banking locally. This audio seminar is a great introduction to the benefits of banking locally and the story of one woman's successful transition from a centralized to a local bank. You can find this at the website solari.com. Again, it's solari.com, standing for Solari Audio Seminar, presented again by Catherine Austin Fitz, F-I-T-T-S. Another place to look is Rainforest Action Network, which is a leading nationwide movement to stop the two largest funders of coal power plants, Citibank and Bank of America. You can find out more about and join the movement on their website. And that is ran.org. And lastly, another local banking resource is Kyle Thierman, a young pro surfer from Santa Cruz, California, who inspired people to move over $100 million of lending power from central banks to local banks as a result of his initial video project, Claim Your Change. The video shows how people's deposits in Bank of America could be funding the development of a coal power plant in Chile. You can find out more about this on his website, surfingforchange.com. That's all one word, surfingforchange.com. You can also watch his YouTube presentation, Surfing for Change, Claim Your Change, 2008, to get more information about this project. So there's lots of things out there that we all can do according to our own likes and energy reserves to help make a profound change to the economic experience of our country and through our country, the whole world. We just need to put some attention on learning about these things and awakening from the fog and misdirection we have been put in for too long of a time to divert this creative-based nation from its true potential. And we will continue this rediscovery in the next show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.